You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East. Talking Atlanta Braves with Mark Bowman, looking at Julio Teheran's bounce back, Kelly Johnson's hot start, and Mike Foltynewicz's first start. Talking Miami Marlins, beat reporter Joe Fusaro, looking at Matt Latos, Jared Cosart, and the rotation. Talking with WFAN and Mets broadcaster and reporter Ed Coleman when we talk Mets, looking at Wilmer Flores and the rest of an infield that's just kind of in flux. Talking with Todd Zielecki about the Philadelphia Phillies and taking a look at Chase Utley and Ryan Howard. And talking with Bill Ladson about the Washington Nationals, looking at Anthony Rendon, Jason Wirth, and the second base situation. Ed, it's been already some up and down for the Mets in a relatively short span. Something interesting this weekend. Wilmer Flores got what's being described as a little break or a little breather. He's hit well. He's had some defensive struggles. What's the plan with Flores right now?
Well, they have told us anyway, Matthew, that he's going to have a long leash. What that means, I'm not exactly sure. Obviously, with a pitching staff like the Mets have, you need a pretty strong infield defense, and they haven't gotten that either from Wilmer Flores or Ruben Tejada when he's filled in either. So, they've had some problems there, but they do believe Flores will hit. Currently he is tied to the lead in home runs, not very many, just three thus far in the season. But, he's shown some pop at the plate. He hasn't been great. They think he can be better. They think some of that offense will make up for the lack of range at defense, but really the range has not hurt him that much thus far. It's either been a bobble here and there or an errant throw. Seven errors, obviously, project out to about 45 or 47 before the year's out. And I think that may be a little bit too many.
Yeah, when they give a guy a little time off like this, in this case, should that be read more as some concern and maybe look at alternatives, or is that maybe more the opposite, that, hey, we really need this guy to be a part of this, and so we're going to kind of give him a chance to get his head right and get going again?
Yeah, I think the game the other day, the Friday game, probably was the turning point to sit him down for a couple of games. He had the golden sombrero that game, had an error as well. They said Terry Collins already had him penciled in for an off day on Saturday, and I think he just extended that through Sunday. I'm sure he'll be at shortstop and in the lineup tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles and probably most of the week as well, too. I wouldn't read too much into it at this point in time. Obviously, the play has to improve over time. And, again, if you're going to have the crucial error that's going to turn the fulcrum in a game and, be the turning point of the game and put your pitchers in jeopardy, then, that's not going to wash for a very long period of time. But they believe it will get better.
Of course, shortstop, not the only place in the infield in flux right now. They bring up Dilson Herrera and move Daniel Murphy over to third base. First of all, does that say anything about David Wright's situation? Is that maybe any kind of an indication that David Wright's return is not quite as imminent as it had seemed?
Yeah, you can probably read into that, Matthew, because it's Wright, they had talked about hopefully being back for the weekend series in Philadelphia. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're probably looking at the following week. They want to make sure that the hamstring is. Totally good, and that he will take off from here and not go out again or not suffer a relapse of that injury. So they want to be careful with him, and right now he's still having, I think, a little bit of difficulty. He's doing baseball activities down in Florida, but really has not run the bases that much. So I think they're being careful with him right now. So you can probably read into that a little bit. They'll put Murphy there for the time being. They've said that when Wright comes back, Murphy will go to second. Herrera, depending on how he does, obviously will probably go back to AAA. But, I think they'll give it as long as they can to make sure the Wright is totally healthy when he gets back.
When they call up Herrera, who's a pretty well-regarded prospect, is that more about what's not happening on the big league roster, or is that more just about wanting to take a shot on a guy who's a pretty intriguing player?
Well, I think what's interesting about it is I don't know if the Mets last year at this time would have done things this way. They probably just would have ridden things out and left Herrera down there. He did come up last year. He was an early cut in spring training, but I didn't read that much into it because they just wanted to get him in place and get his at-bats at the minor league level. He performed very well. He was hitting .370 at AAA, so they brought him up. I do think that they believe he is the future at that spot. I think they have high regard for Matt Reynolds, who's a shortstop down at AAA in Las Vegas. Both of those guys, I think, are on the horizon, so to speak. But Herrera is the guy that they can use right now with shifting Murphy over to third, and that's the way they want to play it. But I think what it says in general is that the Mets have their prospects are probably in a better place at this time this year than they were last year, and that they can probably, I guess, more confidently, you know, call on them to come up and fill the breach this year as opposed to last year.
What sort of player, both offensively and defensively, do the Mets think and do you think that Herrera becomes? Because, again, I think, it's my understanding, he's a pretty well-regarded player.
He is, yeah. They were very happy to get him last year from the Pirates. They had high hopes for him. He came quickly last year and, basically made the jump from Double-A to the majors. He struggled at this level, but they kind of expected that. He hasn't exactly taken off thus far, but, you know, it's early. He's only had a couple of games under his belt, two or three games, so they expect a little bit more. They think that, he can be close to a 300 hitter, field his position very well, turn the double play very well, and also have a little bit of pop in his bat, too. For a little guy, he's built compactly, and he's got a little pop in his bat. So they believe that, he can be a 10 to 15 home run guy, but also hit for average and be a good on-base percentage guy and field his position well. So they'd be very happy with that at second base if they could get it.
Coming out of this weekend series with the Nats, it's certainly not as though the Mets were knocked around at all, but I think it has to be considered a disappointment after this looked like a big series. They pitched well. They just didn't score any runs. Now, some of that obviously is Washington can pitch, but how does this offense kind of get back to being productive, aside from just not having to face the Nationals starters for a while?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'm sure they're working on that right now because it has been a problem. And the middle of the lineup has been a little bit barren right now, too. Lucas Duda and Michael Kadire had a couple of big spots in the final game of that series on Sunday, and both came up empty with a couple of runners in scoring position. So things have not gone well there. They didn't hit well with runners in scoring position pretty much throughout that series, which hurt them. But I would say that they're not totally concerned about it from this vantage point. You know, you mentioned the Washington pitching, and I know that the first two guys who pitched probably have bigger reputations, but Gio Gonzalez and Doug Fister have been just death against the Mets. Gio is 6-1 at Citi Field. In 9 career starts. He loves pitching there, loves the mound, and he did it again on Saturday. And Doug Fister has made 5 starts against the Mets, 5-0. So they don't get too much off of either guy, and they didn't get anything off either guy this time around. As a matter of fact, you know, they have 18 scoreless innings right now, but if you take out a 3 spot that they got in the 8th inning and the 4-0 win on Friday night, that came off a line drive from Daniel Murphy, but Jason Worth misplayed the ball in left field. So if you take those 3 away, Michael Kadire's solo home run in the 4th inning has been basically the only run here for the last 3 days. So they have some work to do, and I think the middle of the lineup obviously has to pick it up a little bit, but probably down from 1-8 as well, too.
One last thing, and I'll let you go, and thank you for your time. Anything at all surprising about what Matt Harvey has done at the start of this season? 5 starts, and to my eye, looks like the same guy we saw before he got hurt.
Yeah, well, I guess that shouldn't be surprising enough as it is that he is the same guy, and I agree with you, Matthew. I think he hasn't missed a beat, skipped a beat, and this is from spring training on. Honestly, this is from the first start in spring training when he went out and pitched his 2-inning stint to lead things off in spring training. The second start in spring training and probably the second start on the major league level have not been tremendous. But outside of that, it's been to me, he's been lights out. He's done everything he's wanted to do out there. He's had very little traffic on the base paths. The last start he had, a runner did not get beyond second base, even though he had a runner on, I think, every inning. He's just been tremendous. The command of his pitches, and I think the fastball command escaped him in his last start, but
basically, when that happened, he still had his breaking ball and slider that he was throwing in for strikes at any count. So the total command he's had of his pitches, the presence on the mound, the 96, 97 mile an hour fastball, whenever he needs it, he reaches for it. He looks like the same guy. He looks healthy. I've said a couple of times already that I think he's well on his way to winning 20 games, and he's 5-for-5 thus far. So unless he gets hurt, unless something happens, or he gets a dead on somewhere, you know, during the season, I think this will continue. So I wouldn't be surprised at anything he does this year.
Mark, last time we talked, and I think maybe even once or twice before that, we were talking about concerns about Julio Teheran. Last time out, he looked like the guy that the Braves are used to seeing and expect to see. What was different about him last time out as opposed to previous outings this year?
I think what we saw yesterday was the more aggressive Julio Teheran. And in the process of being more aggressive, we did see him go back to relying on the fastball as frequently as he did in the past when he had been successful. But at the same time, what we saw were some swings and misses from that fastball that we hadn't seen in the past. He went through a string yesterday where he struck out 5 consecutive batters, and within that span, he got he threw a couple 94-mile-per-hour fastballs that we hadn't seen at least the last few weeks from him. So the heater, the velocity was back, a little bit more movement with his two-seamer, and you just saw a little bit more edge to him. The previous three starts, you know, he stepped back yesterday and said, look, maybe I wasn't as aggressive as I needed to be in those outings. But I think, you know, not only just getting back to throwing that fastball 4 strikes, adding a little bit of velocity, made his slider and other secondary stuff a little bit more effective as well yesterday.
So it's kind of a chicken egg thing. Was he not throwing the fastball because he didn't have faith in it, or was the fastball less effective because he was throwing it with less conviction and less often? I mean, if the life on it comes back and he starts throwing it more in the same start, how do you kind of parse that? What led to what, and what kind of changed in both ways?
Well, you know, I think when we talked last time, Freddy Gonzalez had reviewed and Roger McDowell had reviewed those films of his previous three starts and said he hadn't been throwing the fastball. Now, if you go back and look at the numbers, he did throw the fastball just as frequently as he had in the past during the one start against the Mets. Now, he didn't have his secondary stuff that day because he couldn't get a feel in the windy weather, which we've seen that be a problem with him in the past. The other two starts, I think it was more of a shying away from the fastball. The one in Toronto when he gave up 4 home runs, the one here against the Nationals where he gave up 7 runs. Only 3 of them were earned, but if you watched the game and saw that he gave up 10 hits, it was constant trouble. Had he even gotten out of that with 5 innings and 3 earned runs, you know, I there were still going to be concerns because the velo just wasn't there, and the contact rate was consistent there with, or, you know, the Nationals were consistently making contact with that fastball and, more importantly, putting it in play with regularity, and I think that's what we saw. We just saw a few more swings and misses yesterday. Still not to the point to where you'd say, hey, look, this is the Julio Teheran of old. His swing and miss pitch is the slider. I'm not going to say he's going to use that fastball and going to blow guys away with regularity, but I think what we saw yesterday was more indicative of where he wants to get to as he's moving forward, a guy who, you know, tries to get ahead with first pitch strike and hope that makes his slider that much more effective later in the count.
To go elsewhere in that rotation, Mike Foltynewicz pitched on Friday night, and it was kind of a mixed bag, but if you're going to grade on a curve for a guy who's making his debut with a club as a prospect, probably some things to like. What did they like? What did they not like about what they saw from him in his first start?
I think if you take a step back, what you have to like most about his outing is that he was able to bounce back from a rough first inning and pitch quite effectively. Or, well, let's say this. He was able to pitch and escape some the threats that he encountered through over the remainder of his 5-inning stint. I think he only had he was only perfect in one of those 5 innings. So he was encountering trouble the whole time. You saw some life on the fastball. You saw the breaking ball was you saw the potential with it. You saw why. You know, this guy's stuff is going to catch eyes. But at the same time, you know, that the Reds stole five bases against him. He has altered his delivery to where he has a little bit of a hip turn. He has done this hip turn to slow himself down, his delivery down, with the hope of gaining more consistent command, throwing more strikes. At the same time, what it has done, it has given opposing base runners, you know, the invitation to steal at will, it seems like. Within that start, there were two different – once they stole the three bases in the first inning, he went from a 1.8 with his delivery to a 1.1. It was somewhere in between. Freddie Gonzalez said after the game, look, we need him to be somewhere in between. At 1.8, he's 2.2 slow. Guys are going to run on him at 1.1. He's rushing himself to the mound. So this guy, he is a work in progress. The stuff is there. I think the one most encouraging thing I think the Braves see out of this was the makeup. A guy who, you know, it was a rough first inning, came back and held strong the rest of the way. You know, I don't think I saw that guy in spring training. I saw a guy who, when he got in trouble, he went ahead and tried to overpower somebody. The other night he pitched more frequently. Spring training, we saw him give up back-to-back home runs because he was frustrated one day. I saw him react to a two-out walk at the bottom of the order, and then he walked the next two guys during one of those outings down there in Florida. I didn't see that guy the other night. I saw a more mature guy, a little more relaxed guy. And I think, you know, now he's got the first one under his belt. We'll see where he goes. Hey, look, he's not going to – he's far from a finished product, but at the same time, look, this goes without saying, but it's a lot better seeing him out there than Trevor Cahill.
So where does he stand going forward? Is he in the rotation? Is it still start to start? What's the status for him in the rotation?
No, the plan is for Foltynewicz to be in the rotation for the foreseeable future. Now, you know, if he struggles here over a few starts, you know, they may have to take a step back and say, look, are we doing him more harm than good to keep him in the rotation? But, yeah, I think their hope is that he remains in the rotation for the rest of the season. What does that do for Trevor Cahill? For right now, I don't think they're worrying about that. Yes, they've spent the $5.5 million on him. We talked about that last week. That's pretty expensive for, you know, a long reliever. Or, you know, if you want to take a step back and just say, hey, look, it's a pretty expensive draft pick there, but with the 75th overall selection coming, the same deal as Cahill from the Diamondbacks. But at the same time, I think they're looking at this maybe as a sunk cost. They're looking to do whatever they can to stay competitive. And if Foltynewicz continues to, you know, make progress, he's going to take his lumps. But as long as he is moving in the right direction, I do expect him to be in the rotation the rest of the year.
Bounce around a little. What got into Kelly Johnson?
What I will say about Kelly Johnson is this. We have seen Kelly streaky in the past, you know. So let's see what the next month or a few weeks bring. You know, when he gets hot, it's hard to sneak anything past him. But this has been fun. You know, it's great to see – you know, somebody that you saw or covered as a kid, come back home and have this kind of success. And really, it was cool to see the smile on his face after getting to run out to third base before yesterday's game. And his son's little league team was there. Of course, his son was standing there at third base. And then you've got, who knows what the exact time span was, but 10 to 15 minutes later, Kelly's rounding the bases with his fifth homer of the year. And look, he's hit five home runs already here through the season's first month. He hit seven home runs last year playing for three different, you know, AL East teams. It was a frustrating season. He could not, you know, stick with a team. I think in the back of his head, he was contemplating retirement. You know, maybe this is it. And Freddie Gonzalez called in January and said, look, come to camp. We'll find you a spot. And I remember being in Kissimmee on probably, let's see, the Grapefruit League season started, I believe, on March 4th, probably March 11th. I'm sitting there talking to a scout, and he said, boy, his bat is so slow, he's done. And it was like 3 or 4 days later, he got going and finished that Grapefruit League season strong. And really, he has been a great asset here for the Braves. You know, look, I don't expect him to continue hitting for this kind of power, but if he can continue to be in the solid utility guy, a guy that can fill in here and there out there in left field. If he gets a majority of the starts out there in left field, then I don't think that it's a completely lost season. I think they will make some adjustments here. Maybe even when they bring up some of the other kids, and I'm sure we'll get into that. Maybe if, but it's nice to have a guy like Kelly, a veteran who can play left field, can play third base, put him at second base. His best role is as a utility player, but for now, he's going to enjoy this run that he's on.
Is he going to be part of that third base mix while Chris Johnson's out?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he was there yesterday. He's not there today. They've got he's actually out of the lineup today. Ferry Gonzalez thought about giving him a day off yesterday. He played, so I think that was his seventh straight start yesterday. So he's just getting a day off today. But I do think that he will see some time there. They're just as comfortable with him there as they are with Alberto Collazo, and probably better. You know, Kelly's probably a better defender there. So you'll see him maybe get a majority of the starts there against right-handers. Now the question is, what do you do out there in left field? So he's just with Johnny Gomes, the days that you don't want him facing a certain right-hander. You know, Kelly may be out there and Collazo at third.
And one last thing, because I get to be the one who asked the questions. Cameron Maben hitting .220, still really effective because he's drawing walks, because he's hitting for power. We've talked about center field options. Eric Young is not hitting a thing. Is Maben, despite the batting average, starting to claim that center field role a little more from Eric Young?
Yes, I do think so. I think let's go back a month, and I'm going to say this, Matthew. You win on that argument. I would have said that Eric Young Jr. would have been the one that they kept producing. You win on the Cameron Maben argument because, yes, there's no reason to continue running Eric Young Jr. out there. Why don't you just give Cameron Maben, a majority of the starts? If you want to give him a day off occasionally, then throw EY out there. That's fine. Let's take that a step further. Last week when they made their roster move, when they needed to create a roster spot on Saturday, they ended up bringing up Pedro Siriaco from going out. I thought they should have gone with Todd Cunningham and gone ahead and released Eric Young Jr. At that point in time. I've seen enough from EY to say, look, it's not going to work. Go ahead and at least give a kid in your system a chance to share or serve as Cameron Maben's backup. I do not know exactly when Eric Young will, maybe get back in the lineup. From all indications, he's healthy. But this guy needs to figure something out. And unfortunately, you can't send him to the minors right now at this stage of his career. He doesn't seem willing to do that. So I think what you're seeing it, is that you're going to see Cameron Maben out there. I don't think Eric Young Jr. will be here all season. But the one element that I am a little bit surprised about is that Jose Ferraz has not played any center field down there at Gwinnett yet. So if anyone was thinking, hey, look, Peraza will be in center field at some point, I'd still expect him to be in Atlanta maybe some point in June, but their initial plans to have him play some center field and possibly come here to Atlanta and help out at that position, it doesn't seem like they're leaning that way right now.
Bill, we're into May, and we still don't really know when Anthony Rendon is going to be back. The Nationals lately are doing pretty well without him. But he's a really essential part of this roster. What exactly is up with Rendon and his recovery right now?
Well, right now, he no longer has the knee injury. He now has an oblique strain, and right now we don't know how long he's going to be out for. You know, dealing with the Nationals like dealing with Bill Belichick because they try to be secretive when it comes to these injuries. But I think personally that Rendon will be out for a while. I mean, we probably might not see him till June now. I mean, we're already in the first week of May. So, and also, you got to remember, prior to the last 2 years, Anthony Rendon was an injury-prone player in college and in his early days in the minor leagues. So right now, it looks like he's back to what he used to be. So I'm just thinking right now it's going to be, probably June sometime.
And that kind of sets up something I really wanted to ask about him. I mean, he's such a good player and was such a big part of that team last year. But as you note, this guy has a lengthy injury history, and it's something that is a worry. I mean, as Will Carroll says, health is a skill. He finally demonstrated that last year, but that's 1 year. To what extent is there organizational concern, not just about this specific issue, but about this recurrence of a guy who has a hard time staying healthy?
You know, Matthew, I don't know if the Nationals have what I call a real concern right now. Now, if he misses the whole season, that's going to be a concern. But right now, I think they're hoping that he gets back in time in June, and then he can really help this team. Because right now, you know, offensively, they've been okay, just okay. And they still not hitting with runners in scoring position at all. And they got to, I think having Rendon back will make a big difference if he comes back in June.
With the number of at-bats and games that he's missed already, is he going to need more than a few days in a row? I mean, he's had a day here and a day there on a minor league rehab assignment, but whenever it is that he's cleared to play again, is he going to need more than 3 or 4 days? Is he going to need a more extended time to get his swing and be ready to hit big league pitching just because of how much time he's already missed?
I would have to think so, Matthew, because, you know, they're doing it with Stan in the major league. So, you know, giving him a day here and a day there just to give him a rest, because Stan has admitted, for example, that he is tired. So I'm expecting Rendon to go through the same thing in the minor leagues and even when he gets back to the major leagues. So I'm expecting Rendon to play a lot of games in a row. I'm expecting him to get some rest in between.
And speaking of their rehabbing guys, the numbers don't look good at all for another guy who missed some time and is back recently, Jason Wirth. To your eye, does he look better than the line, or is he pretty much struggling?
Well, I think he's struggling defensively for sure. Offensively, I believe that he's coming around. It's starting with the Mets series. Now, the average is still low, but I think he's coming around with that. And, you know, even though the batting average is low, I'm telling you, the stats doesn't show it, but he's hit a lot of line drives for outs. So I think he's coming around offensively, but defensively, you know, he has to make an adjustment. Left field is new to him, and we saw him make the error against the Marlins yesterday. It was costly, but they won the game, obviously. But I think defensively he's in a slump, and I think he'll get out of it sooner or later.
Is that a matter of rust, or is this something related to come back from injury? Is he not moving well, or is he just full game
shape? You know, Matthew, I really think it's like getting used to playing left field, because, I mean, this is a guy who's played right field and center field for years, and he didn't play much left field. I think he's getting used to playing left field, and we saw what happened against the Mets. He slipped and fell. You know, yesterday he missed a line drive that was hit to him. I really believe, too, Matthew, that the lights have a lot to do with it, especially in Nationals Park, because over the years I've seen good defensive outfielders complain about the lights here. So it wouldn't surprise me if the lights played a role in him missing that ball.
Nationals took 3 out of 4 from the Mets at the end of last week. It was a very big series for the Mets, and Terry Collins even admitted it. Obviously, when you're the reigning champs, you don't make quite as big a deal out of a series against a team that's off to a hot start. But from the Nationals' perspective, was that a big deal to take 3 out of 4 and kind of show the Mets, to some extent, the division title still goes through the district?
Correct. That is true, and they did consider it a big game. They thought that Sunday's win after taking 3 out of 4 was big because, I mean, they realized how bad they were when the season started, and, it showed them that they still, you know, a really good team and that they're on their way. I mean, believe me when I tell you, talking to Jason Wirth, Ian Desmond, they realized that beating the Mets was big, and I think they proved that they are the best team in the East.
They're doing it, I think, kind of differently from the way a lot of people would have expected. They're fourth in runs scored and 10th in runs allowed in the National League. I don't think anybody would have expected either of those, particularly given the injuries. With the pitching staff, you know, and we've talked a lot, it's not been bad, and you can't really even point to any one part of it. They just, aside from Scherzer, haven't really found a groove necessarily. What do you see when you look at the pitching staff as a whole? Because, again, I don't think they've been bad, and yet they're 10th in the league in runs allowed.
You know what, Matthew, the starting pitching has been outstanding. You cannot say, you know, the starting pitching has allowed all these losses. But I have to say that Matt Williams is trying to find a great combination in the bullpen. And I think that he may have found it in Tanner Roark. after what he did yesterday. You know, Tanner Roark could be a nice setup man. You know, unlike Russ Detweiler last year, who moped and didn't want to be a reliever, here's a guy in Tanner Roark who, you know, he had a great year as a starter last year and was demoted to the bullpen because of the signing of Scherzer. And I'm telling you, he's taken his role seriously as a bullpen guy. And we saw he picked up a save. So I think he's figured out, Matt Williams has figured out, whose bullpen could be, especially late in the game. I think we're going to see Aaron Barrett. We're going to see Tanner Roark and Gustorn, obviously, and probably Blake Treinen as well. So I'm just telling you, I think they figured out what's going on with that bullpen now.
We talked about Roark in the spring and talked about, you know, whether he would be an innings guy or a late in the game guy, because on the one hand, you don't want to relegate him to just pitching three outs at a time in case you need a starter. But if you have that need and the guys who aren't back just aren't on the roster and Jansen hurt, is it more reasonable to think now, like you're saying, that Roark becomes a big part of the late inning staff as opposed to maybe a guy who gets you four, five, six, seven outs at a time?
Right. I think Roark is key to the definitely to the bullpen. There's no question about it. I think Matt Williams has proven already that we're not going to see Tanner Roark like be a long man. I think we're not going to see that, because if that was the case, you know, like we probably would have seen him start against the Braves recently, but instead they called up A.J. Cole. So I think without question we're going to see Tanner Roark as one of the top bullpen guys on the Nationals.
And the other thing I want to talk about is the second and third base situation with Rendon out. Yunel Escobar has slid over to third base and is coming off a huge day at the plate. And they're getting production from second base. How exactly are they divvying up the playing time between Danny Espinosa and Dan Uggla at second base?
Well, it's going to be, I really believe this, that it's going to be mostly Danny Espinosa at second base. And against certain veterans, I think we will see Uggla. Uggla has done a great job in the last week or so. But I think we're going to see Espinosa and Uggla maybe in platoon. And we're obviously going to see Escobar at third base on an everyday basis. So I'm just telling you, I think so far, so good from what we've seen from a guy like Espinosa, who stopped striking out. He's not striking out like he did the last 2 years. And Uggla has really got his back going. The batting average doesn't say so because of the slow start in the beginning. But in the last week, he's really hit the ball really well, and he's hit about 400 in the last week, so that's a good sign.
With the ability that Espinosa has to play really nearly anywhere in the infield, I mean, I think we've talked about it. He's a very skilled defensive player. What goes into the decision to have Escobar at third base and Espinosa at second rather than the other way around, given that they theoretically brought Escobar in to be the second baseman?
Well, Escobar is more comfortable at third base. And, you know, he was the shortstop originally. He seems more comfortable at third. And you remember, too, at second base during spring training, he got hurt. He hurt his oblique, and it was out like 2 weeks. So I think there, and also, again, remember, too, that Escobar volunteered to play third base after Rendon went down. So Matt Williams loved that. And that's why we're seeing Escobar at third base right now. So, you know, it's been a good move so far.
Joe, we got a whole bunch of injury updates to go over, so let's start ticking them off. What's the latest with Christian Yelich? It seems like he's headed the right direction.
Yeah, he started his rehab assignment yesterday and played in Jupiter. Has at least two more left with the Hammerheads, and I fully anticipate he's eligible to come off, I think, tomorrow in Washington, but that's not going to happen, and it doesn't look like Washington's going to happen at all. But I'm anticipating Thursday in San Francisco. Christian should be ready to go by then.
What's the expectation of what he'll be able to do when he gets back? And, I mean, mostly performance-wise, because he was not off to a great start and has missed a good amount of time. Is there any thought that maybe he might be a little slow to get going, or is that why he's going to take more than just a couple of days on a rehab assignment?
Well, you know, it's there, obviously. You know, because his swing, that back was clearly bothering him. He just didn't look himself the last couple of days before he went on the DL with the back. And I think they want him. You know, he started the year off hitting second behind Gordon. They kind of envisioned two guys getting on base with good speed. I think they thought Yelly got maybe a little more passive in that number two hole than they really wanted him to be, and didn't think he was like looking to drive the ball as much. I anticipate Matthew, when he comes back, hitting about fifth. And that's going to be an interesting spot because I think they want to kind of get him in the point of his career to start thinking of being a little bit less of that table setter and a little bit more of a run producer and, you know, kind of see if that power will grow and those doubles and then using the gaps a little more. So, you know, Prado provides a really good alternative to hit second, and he has done a great job since Yelly went down hitting there. So I think that's going to be kind of a way to see if they could jump start Yelly as well.
There's also a theory, and look, I'm not a huge believer in the whole idea of protection broadly anyway, but there's also a theory that the best protection behind a power hitter is actually a high average hitter because, you know, if you can – what really worries you if you put guys on is somebody getting a base hit and keeping a rally going rather than somebody who maybe hits a home run behind him. Do you think that's part of the idea here is that to the extent there is such a thing as protection, that protection is a guy who – hits singles and doubles, maybe more than a guy who hits home runs, but maybe doesn't get on base?
Yeah, there's some merit to that, absolutely. You know, if, when you were lining up, you know, the way they've been going lately with Stanton, Ozuna, Morse, you have three guys who strike out a lot. You know, big power in all three of them, but also guys are going to strike out a lot. So if you, you know, I don't see Yelly hitting cleanup, and they're certainly not thinking of moving Stanton from three to four. But, you know, there's something to be said, you know, and you also have a left-handed bat that could go in there. And as you say, a guy who could do enough to get on base, and whether it's the base hit, draw a walk, or, you know, just kind of keep the line moving, I think they think that will be an interesting dynamic as well as lengthening the lineup. But, yeah, I see a lot of value and a lot of merit to what you just said.
Move on down the injury report. It also sounds like there's encouraging news with Henderson Alvarez. How far away is he?
He seems to be the homestand. You know, they're starting 10 games on the road in two coasts, Washington, San Fran, and then L.A. And it looks like when they get home, they've been playing the Braves. The 17th is the day to kind of circle. If you're a Marlins fan and Henderson Alvarez, he should be starting some rehab assignments. They haven't officially said when, but I think he could be seeing game action on Thursday of this week. And give him about two rehab assignments, and he might be ready to come back and help the team mid-month.
And there was some worry about Matt Latos, but he's totally good to go. He'll make his next start, no worries?
Well, good to go. I don't know if we can say no worries. You know, that's an interesting injury he got. You know, just swinging the back in and out of the batter's box, gets a single to right, gets to first base, comes right out of the game with what they call the hamstring. And it's kind of like, I'm not even sure it's exactly that. It's kind of like behind that knee on the he hasn't been moving around great anyway. He had the left knee injury in the, you know, last season with Cincinnati. So, you know, he hadn't been pitching great. He was making a little bit of strides, but it's going to be real curious to see, you know, how he performs. I mean, he's a proud veteran who doesn't like to miss time, and he kind of pushed the envelope to be back. You know, he's had a bullpen session or so and some flat ground. So, they're taking his word that he's ready to go, but that's clearly a start to monitor.
Performance-wise, what do you and what does the club make of Latos's last three starts? I mean, it's better results than he was getting earlier, but still maybe not exactly the guy they thought they were getting two or three runs in five or six innings as opposed to, you know, not getting out of the first or not getting it past the fourth. What do they see when they look at these last three starts? Do they see good news or bad news?
Well, the two starts ago against Nationals, you give two runs in this long, I think it was six and a third, his season high. He threw very well that day. The Marlins went on and won that game. He was matched, I think it was against Zimmerman that night, and did really well, and it looked like he was going to carry that over. Then he gave a two-run homer to Kadire in the first inning of his next start against the Mets. And, you know, had three runs in five innings. It looked like he was going to come back out for the sixth, and then he got, you know, he comes out of the game with the hamstring. So kind of took a little bit of a step backwards rather than, you know, kept pushing forward. But overall, I mean, there's improvement, but not, you know, the steady type that they certainly thought they were getting a clear top of the rotation guy, but he seems more of a guy right now who's still trying to find it physically and getting any type of consistency.
Elsewhere in that rotation, I actually had a note, and we didn't get to it last week. I wanted to ask you about Jared Cosart, who was not allowing runs, but his peripherals weren't really that good. The strikeout to walk was not that encouraging. Last time out, he struck out some guys, but also gave up some runs. How sustainable do you think this low ERA is without picking up the K rate, or do you think maybe he does pick up the strikeout rate? Just kind of what do you expect to see from Cosart going forward?
There always seems to be this kind of that moment to adjust well enough to kind of have it go south on him. I mean, he's thrown the ball really well. You know, the changeup has come a long way, and that's a pitch that kind of didn't exist last year. The breaking ball is really good. He's got stuff to throw to left-handers and right-handers right now. Fastball is a really, really good pitch for him with a lot of movement. So he'll give up a strikeout for a ground ball and, save some pitches. So all that stuff is encouraging. He looks like he could get a strikeout when he needs it, Matthew, but he loses the strike zone very quickly, and that's what happened to him against Philly. He gives up the run to make it 1-1 in the fifth inning, and then he comes out in the sixth. In the bottom of the fifth, his team gets him a run to give him that lead. He has a two-strike count on Ruff and then hits him. And then he just starts throwing fastballs right down the middle of the plate to Howard, and he clobbers one into the gap for a triple. And then he elevates the fastball to Sizemore. He gets a single to left, and his day's over. And it's just like, what just happened? He was throwing really well, and in the span of three batters, and going from a two-strike count to coming out of the game and being on the losing side instead of preserving and getting that shutdown. So I think in his development, there's still kind of that, pitching to the game. Your team gets you that lead. Now get through that last inning. And didn't do that so well against the Phillies, but, overall he's been pretty consistent. There's a lot to be encouraged about. I just have to say it's that consistency with the strike zone and just, not losing it as quickly as he's done a little bit, since they got him.
Is that a concentration thing, a mechanical thing? What happens there?
Yeah, that's a good point. He was probably going to look and see mechanically. Yeah, there are some things he has to do with his delivery. See, when he came over from Houston, he had a little bit more of trouble throwing strikes. Chuck Hernandez, who, when he got drafted by the Phillies, he was with the Phillies at the time, and Chuck has a very good rapport with him and kind of, saw something and just kind of kept him, closed him up a little bit in his delivery. And from time to time, he does slip out of it. So, it could be he is a high-energy type guy. He is a kind of an emotional guy in the mound. He doesn't like to give up hits at all. Some guys, they recognize you're going to give hits up. This guy, you might let it get to him for a batter or two, and next thing you know, he's in trouble. But, to be the type of pitcher he's going to need to be and what they think he can be, he's going to have to lock it down because, as you know, those second, third times through, that determines, where you stand in terms of the elite or, when you're playing a lot of, well-pitched games in the National League East. You can't really have, that. You get through that sixth inning and hold it at 2-1, even if he comes out of the game, they have their bullpen set up and they're looking at, try to hold on for a one-run lead or they add on, he's going to have to do his part, and that's part of the maturation process that Cosart's going through as well.
One last thing, and it kind of follows on all of this. The Marlins are getting the third fewest innings per start in the National League. Their bullpen's thrown the second most innings. Even when Alvarez comes back, presumably they're not exactly going to push him to the wall in his first few starts. He's going to be a guy who probably isn't going deep into games for a little while. How much of a concern is it right now, the strain that bullpen is having to carry?
Yeah, it's a big one. That's why this whole, they did a really good job recovering and getting back into this thing, not let the season slip away. And they still got a couple of weeks of treading water. I mean, they gotta do, these starters, the David Phelps, the Tom Kohlers, are going to have to go as deep as they can. And, Cosart's going to have to come up big. He can't be out of the game in 5+. And, they got to get Alvarez. And that's why you're encouraged if you're a Marlins fan with Alvarez and then Jose a month from now, assuming. You're going to have, two guys, your best two starters are going to be joining you. So, it's still a process of, getting those starters deep enough, and Latos is going to have to do his part too, and take that strain off the bullpen. Otherwise, we're going to see Justin Nicolino up from AAA, Jose Urena from AAA. You're going to see, you know, some long relievers probably going on the DL. You know, it's kind of, you know how it works. You know, eventually it breaks. It can't, you know, you need your starters to go seven as often as possible to avoid that stress. And, you know, that's still a process that they're kind of feeling their way through right now.
Todd, from what I can tell, the biggest topic by far right now in Philly land is Chase Utley, and it's understandable. As we speak, he's hitting 103. That's one thing over a few games. It starts getting worrisome when you're talking a full month. First, just broadly, when you watch Utley, you watch his at-bats, when you watch the ball come off his bat, when you watch him in the field, what do you see relative to recent years?
Well, you definitely see a guy that's not what he once was. But here's the kind of the crazy thing is that I have, and I know you can only say this for so long, I have seen him hit some balls really, really hard, make some good contact over the past several weeks. And, you know, the right center fielder is positioned in the right spot, runs that ball down. Now, that said, there are differences. His ground ball to fly ball ratio right now is higher than it's ever been. I think his ground ball to fly ball ratio right now is 1.57. His career ratio is 0.97. So this is a guy who is hitting a lot more ground balls than he ever has at any point in his career. And those numbers are hard to ignore. So while I have seen him drive some balls lately, you know, certainly I've also seen him ground out a lot. And it is concerning. And Matthew, not only is it the first 5 weeks of this season, you really go back to the numbers that he put up since maybe June 1st of last year. You're talking about a guy who's hit about 215 with a 610 OPS in over 550 plate appearances since the end of May. And you know, you look at that and you go, wow, okay, so this isn't necessarily just a one-month thing. So while he has been certainly better than his numbers indicate right now, he's certainly not, you know, so unlucky that, oh my gosh, if every ball fell, this guy should be hitting 300 with, you know, 13 doubles so far this season.
When you talk to people about the tools, about bat speed, about his eye, about the components to go into success, what are people seeing, you know, scout types, evaluators, what are they seeing when they look at Utley the player and not just the results?
Yeah, you know, they say that he is maybe a step slower, you know, defensively. You know, they don't see maybe the bat speed that they once did. And, you know, talking to Ryan Sandberg as well, he sees him having the bat speed. Of course, you know, he's going to be as optimistic as he can, you know, certainly publicly about Utley's situation going forward. But, you know, not quite at the skill level that he once was. And I don't think anybody with the Phillies expected him to go out and hit 300 this season, but I think they were certainly expecting that he could go out, hit 265, 275 with, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, 80 RBIs. And, you know, on a contending team, you know, that's good. That's a good guy to have in your lineup, but on a team struggling like this, you know, that's not good enough to hit third. And then when you look at his, like I said, like you mentioned, his 103 average, that's really hurting this team offensively right now.
Is there any concern about maybe an undisclosed injury?
Everybody says that he is healthy. You know, maybe his ankle is not 100%. So that to me would stick out. I believe it was, I'm trying to think, somebody mentioned that the other day, I believe, you know, that he had the ankle injury earlier in the season. So maybe that thing is not 100% healed, but in talking to everybody, they say, no, Chase is healthy. What might benefit him as much as anything right now, if his ankle is bothering him or not, is give this guy a few days off, you know, just give him 2-3 days off just to kind of clear his head and maybe have him feel like he's getting a fresh start, you know, at the end of this road trip or beginning of a new homestand coming up.
Putting aside a short-term answer like that, and I think in general you often see that, and it makes sense. Over the course of the season, over these remaining few months, what options do the Phillies have? Is there any viable way to platoon him to start looking at anybody else? Is there anybody pushing him from the farm system, or is it just a matter of he's their second baseman and he's going to play whether he's hitting 150 or 320?
Yeah, the thing with Chase is that it's kind of a touchy subject, I guess, in the sense that he's a guy that's had a great career. He's regarded as a leader in that clubhouse, even though he's not a vocal guy. He definitely is a leader, lead by example guy. Guy puts in a ton of work before the game, after the game, getting his treatment, you know, watching video, taking early hitting, extra hitting, all that type of stuff. So they want to be kind of careful with how they proceed with him. Now, that said, there are some people in the organization that do think if given the opportunity, Cesar Hernandez could maybe hit big league pitching on a pretty consistent basis, not at the power level that Utley once provided, but, you know, a guy that could hit maybe around 275 or above, show a lot of speed, cause some problems on the base paths, and I think some people are kind of anxious or eager to see what he could do. Maybe there's a situation where if Utley continues to struggle, that they can work Cesar Hernandez in a little bit more. I mean, after all, this season is about learning about the future, and if some people in the organization think that Cesar Hernandez could be a player in some way, shape, or form, you know, now's the opportunity to try to give him a look.
On the flip side of that, it's obviously not a great year for Ryan Howard by any means, but I feel like it seems like there are some encouraging signs. He's hit 4 home runs. It seems like there are at least some things to like. You go over the last couple of weeks, and he's slugging in the 550s. Do you, if Ryan Howard hits 200 but hits 25 home runs, are they okay with that? Is that a tradable player, or is that a complete wash?
I think he would be a tradable player if they would eat, you know, pretty much all of that contract. I don't think that they want to release a player like Ryan Howard. I think they would like, if they do decide to move on with him, I think they would like to trade him to somebody. So if he's hitting enough power, then you could probably stick him in 6th, 7th in a contending team's lineup. I think they would be interested in doing that. But I think they're okay with it right now because they really don't have too many other options. Now, Darren Ruff is starting to hit the ball a little bit over the last week. Again, just 1 week, small sample size, but it might be a situation where you start seeing Darren Ruff play a little bit more against left-handed pitching, have Ryan Howard play against the right-handed pitching. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Again, they're trying to look for the future, and there are people in the organization that just want to say, hey, let us figure out what we have with Darren Ruff going forward. You know, let's give him 500 plate appearances, see what he does with it, and if he's great, great. If he can't handle it, then at least we can finally know what we have with him. And one way that they can do that is maybe having him split some time at first base with Ryan Howard.
What's the argument against that? I mean, Howard doesn't want to be platoon, but I got to think Howard doesn't want to be released either. And he's not a guy over the years who's really shown he's any kind of a threat against lefties. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think Howard would put up a big fight if you just said, look, we're going to play every day against right-handers and not against lefties. What's your argument against doing that? Why aren't they doing that now?
That's kind of the mystery. Ryan Sandberg hasn't really given a clear answer on that. I think maybe – well, what happened last year is Ryan Sandberg wanted to do that, but he kind of basically just benched Howard without giving him an explanation. I think the front office came down and said, listen, this guy's kind of a legend in the organization's history. You know, you can't just handle it that way. So the next thing you know, Ryan Howard is playing every day again. I think if they sat him down and say, listen, it's now June 1st. You're hitting 196. You've hit some home runs. But, you know, we've given you a long time to go here. We're going to go with a full-out platoon. Darren's going to play against lefties, like you said. You're going to play against righties. I think he would be upset about it, you know, because he's still got a lot of pride and rightly or wrongly still thinks he can produce on an everyday basis. But I don't think he could put up too much of a fight or put up any fight when he looks at those numbers. So I think that's something that could be headed, that the Phillies could be headed towards. But when it comes to Utley and Howard, I think they want to be sensitive to the fact, to what they brought to the organization. And so they want to be able to give them enough time, I guess, even though 5 weeks seems like a lot of time. I think they want to definitely go like, listen, this has been 2 months now, or this has been 2.5 months. You know, it's time we start looking elsewhere.
Do those two guys magnify the challenge of each other? Not even intentionally, not as far as putting up a fuss or anything, but does the fact that these two guys who were such a core piece of so much success are kind of facing their baseball mortality at the same time. Do they make the individual challenges more difficult, the fact that the other one is there and the fact that you can kind of lump them in and they're not exactly the same? Is each individual guy more difficult a challenge because the other is there or no?
Yeah, perhaps, because I think you have to I think maybe the organization looks like it. Well, you have to treat both of these guys kind of similarly, even though right now, really, Utley's pretty much he's barely moved out of the three spot. He's played every day, whereas Sandberg's been more open to sitting Howard and throwing him down in the lineup. But I think it does make it a little bit more difficult to handle these players because they are both still here. And you don't want to be like, all right, we're just going to treat this guy one way and treat this guy another way. And then the other guy's like, hey, wait a second, I helped you win a World Series too. You know, what's going on here? So, I definitely think it kind of adds to the difficulty of what you can do. One of these guys were the last man standing, then it might be a little bit easier to say, listen, you know, clearly we're you know, you're the last guy here, but we need to move on, and it might be easier for that player to take it.
Right. This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.